Yo, what's up, everybody? It's your boy Icy Blue. Welcome to Blues Talks. This is the marks the second episode of the series. Don't know how many we're gonna do. I'm thinking probably 9 for a special reason, but we'll get into that later. Today I am joined with Utah County's own poet.
Hey, poet. What up, man?
Thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate that. Forgive my dog barking. He's kind of upset that he can't join the podcast today.
I'm just saying some cold shit, man. He wants his 15 seconds too. He's been riding with you, man. He's been like, yo, I've been the roadie. I've been holding it down.
He wants to give his opinion really, really bad. But yeah, man, thank you so much for driving such a long way. Where'd you come from? American Fork, yeah?
Yeah, man, American Fork. Nah, man.
Good God, man.
Man, that wasn't shit for a man. Nah, it's just it's these fucking Utah drivers, man, that don't use their blinkers. That'd be, it's almost like you got just one or the other. Either they are hauling so much ass and they're going right behind you and you're already doing 80. It's like, hey, man, you going to pay my ticket? Like,
I know.
I'm already going past the speed limit. You and me on the same wavelengths, but you trying to, like, go around, motherfucker. I ain't going to jail tonight. What you want? And then you got the other folk that are, like, going 10 under. It's like, hey, I get it. You saw that truck fly by. He's a dick.
I know.
And you're trying to take it cool, but maybe just get in the other fucking lane. I don't know, man. And
there's so many lanes, too.
I know. Honestly, man, it's almost like you guys are spoiled as shit. Try driving in L.A. like that, man. Yeah. Like, try driving in Boston like that, where you ain't got lights every 10 feet and shit like that, man.
And the fact that, because I've made a few trips out there, and it always seems to be construction on this certain part of the freeway. Every time, the road splits, and so it's like all these different lanes are splitting, but they got this big gap in the middle, and then the road's all jumbly and bumpy, and it's a crazy ride.
Well, I-15, man, like, that shit is, like, honestly, if the Utah state government and all their conservative wisdom, they might say they don't believe in socialism. That is bullshit. They are keeping money for UDOT to keep doing those motherfucking things forever, man. I mean, they were working on that shit when I was a kid.
I feel like construction never stops in Utah.
Oh, never. And, I mean, and it shouldn't. Like, I ain't knocking. It's just...
I mean...
But I will say, that right there at that point of the mountain, that is like Mario fucking Kart.
It is,
man. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's almost like the Rainbow Road.
You gotta watch out.
Shit, man. It's some shit, dude.
Oh, my God. Hilarious. But again, man, dude, thank you so much for making the trip out here. I know it's a long drive. You may not think it was shit, but it is a long drive. That's a lot of gas. And plus, you got to drive back, I'm assuming.
Nah, anytime, brother. I'm always happy to come rock with you, fam.
Cool, man. But for those who are unfamiliar, the show, we're just diving into hip-hop and, our loves of hip-hop and how we got started into it, and just kind of diving into all the aspects of it. So the first thing I wanted to kind of dive into was, kind of what got you started in, like, listening to hip hop. I know for me, it was a mix of different things. But it really kind of started with, like, Ice Cube was a big one. Like, he was the first rapper that I ever kind of heard of, like, him and NWA. NWA was a weird sound. Like, I do enjoy NWA, but, you know, as a kid, I mean, you're not, like, being like, oh, okay, like...
Oh, so this is this kind of style, this kind of style. It's like, oh, this is what it is, right?
I mean, if you really want to get technical, I mean, like, you know, Will Smith back in the day and DJ Jazzy Jeff. Like,
right.
The pioneers and stuff like that, but when I really, really started to kind of listen to the lyrics was, like, Ice Cube, and I think it was Today Was a Good Day. That was the first song that really kind of hit me. And the first one that I had to learn, like, I had to learn the words to that song.
Straight up, man.
I had to rap it. And it's weird because, like, it went from Ice Cube and then all the way to Method Man, which was, you know, for me, it was, like, it was always an East versus West thing all the time when I grew up. Like, it was always, you know, Biggie versus Tupac and all that shit. So I found myself kind of, like, listening to both sides. I definitely was a West Coast kid. Like, I love the West Coast. I love, you know, Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg and all that stuff. And I kind of did like the East Coast. Like, I wasn't big on it though. Like, it was mainly Wu-Tang.
Right. And, well, I, like, mean, Wu-Tang ain't nothing to fuck with. No matter where you at, man.
Exactly.
I mean, shit, dude.
You know, so, I mean, there was a lot of different things there. And then as I got older, and I went into, like, high school and, like, shit like that, That's when it turned to like Tech N9ne and like that Midwest kind of choppy sound, and listening to like Southern music from like 2000s, like T.I. and shit like that. So it's weird on how like as you grow, you kind of learn to find different things that you like. And kind of, if you're an artist, you know, mesh those into kind of like your own style, which is what I tried to do.
Right.
But I'm curious to actually know, like, kind of your side, like what got you started listening to hip hop?
Well, what started for me was my mother. You know, I was 6 years old. My mom, she would always, like, this was back in the VH1 days and like when MTV actually played music videos and she would like record them. Right. And
yeah.
And I would just be this kid, and I all of a sudden, like, you know, I would put on these tapes, and I would just see all these music videos. And what did it for me was Tupac, man. It was California Love. Mm-hmm. You know, that was when I started hearing that. And there was Coolio's Gangsta's Paradise.
And
these were records that as a kid just blew me away.
Oh, yeah.
And it really struck a chord because at that time is when I discovered writing. I was starting to write little short stories, poems, all that kind of stuff. And when I heard this, it was like, wow, like, I was just blown away by all of that shit.
Yeah.
And so at that time, coming about 7 years old, my cousin from Norway came over to stay with us. He was 18.
Wait, did you say Norway?
Yes, my family.
Wow.
How you gonna know me this long? You don't know my family immigrated from Norway, man. Shit. What kind of shit is that, man? You know what? I'm walking out this bitch right now. You gonna get your dog to finish this interview.
I thought you were gonna say like, you know, like Chicago or some shit, New York.
Nah, Norway. Fucking way, right, man. Right, we're talking all the way out there. And,
got you.
And when he came over, you know, he brought all his like CD collection with him. Excuse me. He brought all of his. I think a lot of people don't realize a lot of artists love your Europe.
Yeah.
They really love touring over there. The energy is different.
Seriously.
Fans love it. I mean, it's really huge. And I think, one, that was an interesting thing I didn't pick up on because, one, I was fucking 7. But, like, hip-hop was already universal at that point. It was all over the world. So this time, my mom's was kind of, she was going, went through this phase of being a born-again Christian, right? And And so at that time, it was like, yeah, you know, no explicit lyrics, you know, parental advisory stickers. And me, I'm kind of laughing my ass off. I was like, Mom, didn't you just show me the movie Die Hard? Like, what the fuck? Like, you know, yeah, titties and slit throats and all that. But hey, fuck the police. Well, you know, like, okay, maybe I'm just tripping.
Let's not have that in the house.
So what became even more an obsession because now it wasn't kind of like, you know, it was kind of this taboo thing. So I remember collecting all of my cousin's albums like they were baseball cards, man. And this is when I started stumbling on to a lot of West Coast shit, man. It was NWA. We're talking Eazy-E, Real Motherfucking G's. We're talking The Chronic. We're talking Doggy Style. All this shit. And I couldn't get enough of it. I was just bumping it every single day.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and at that time, too, right before my mother kind of did her change, you know, she was dating a lot of brothers, and a lot of these brothers were from California. So I was West fucking Coast, man. It was everything. It was the way I dressed. It was the way I walked. It was the way I talked.
Yeah.
Because what hip-hop was to me, it was the you know, this game that taught me how to live a life because I didn't have a father.
Yeah.
I didn't have any older male role models because, I mean, my cousin was 18 and I was 8 years old. I mean, shit, he was out there, you know, spreading some Norwegian, you know, love over to all the Asians over at BYU. I ain't playing, man. He was about that Asian persuasion, man. So I didn't have that.
Yeah.
And when I was in school, you know, I was this kind of overweight kid. I had the bowl cut. I looked like them kids from that movie Heavyweights, man. And you know, my mother, she was such a hardworking woman. Like, she always busted her ass. She was the type that taught me never make any type of excuses. So that means I was home by myself. I was the porch kid, the latchkey kid, but I didn't have no neighborhood friends to go run off with. So I would just be listening to this music. And so Tupac and them, you know, but really mainly it was Tupac. I started to, you know, find his collection and listen to Me Against the World. I got to listen to, you know, Strictly for My and all that shit. Like these records were so major to me. And then when it started getting older, I started watching MTV, and then TRL was on. Now, this is way before the Times Square and all that. People who don't know, TRL, when it first started with Carson Daly, was almost like some fucking, like pioneering broadcast shit. It was him in this, like, little black studio with a computer monitor, and he'd just show you some shit, man.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking Backstreet Boys, and I don't give a fuck who you is, man. That joint, everybody. And when you heard that, you boogie, man. I don't man. I don't give a fuck who you is. That record was dope. And then, and I know everyone's waiting for whenever a motherfucker of my skin pigmentation gets on and talks about hip hop. I know they're waiting for this. But yes, when I was about 8, 9 years old, that's when I saw What My Name Is by M. And what was so interesting about first hearing some Shady for the first time was that what I heard was so much more different than what I was listening to. Because at that time, remember, I'm 7. I'm not universally schooled. I didn't have no one to teach me hip-hop or teach me about all these different cats and all that. I just had what was right there in my cousin's CD collection. So it was all fucking like real raw reality shit.
Yeah.
We're talking real raw fucking, we're talking about drug dealing, all that shit. And then Tupac kind of gave me a more expanded universe. But then I'm hearing What My Name Is and I'm like, what the fuck, dude? Because listening to how M was rapping.
Yeah.
When he talk like that line, I will always remember when he says, "Well, today's 12. I felt like someone else because I hung my original self with a top bunk with a bell." I was like, "What the fuck, bro?" I was like, "Holy shit!" And so, my cousin who worked at Fred Meyer, the one cool shit was I go over there and I just blew CDs, man. I just walk out. So I copped that, and when I put it on, I'm kind of like, "Yo, man, okay, this is kind of cool and all that." I mean, I didn't find anything special because the dude was pale like me or nothing like that.
Yeah.
But when I first started hearing Rock Bottom, that was a big game changer with how I viewed Eminem as an artist and how he impacted my life. Because that was what I was attracted to. I was looking for the solace of the pain that I had as a fatherless, young boy with no brothers, with, my mom who's working. Now my little sister's on the way. I had no friends. Like these were it, man. Like Wu-Tang, those were my fucking boys, man. Yeah. Like those were the... Like, these were my heroes.
Yeah.
It wasn't, the baseball cards. It wasn't all this shit, man. Like these were my role models. These were everything to me.
Yeah.
So it was really these really personal records that made me feel like, you know what? Not only am I not alone, but I don't need to give a fuck.
Yeah,
this really helped me change my attitude from being this kid, walking around Hillcrest Elementary feeling like, man, maybe there's something wrong with me, to like, man, fuck all y'all lame-ass motherfuckers, man, and come and say something to me.
Yeah.
So it really gave me the emphasis to strike back. And so now I'm kind of like getting older and, I'm kind of looking into more shit. And now my writing is just continuing to grow. I'm now like, because I'm hearing all this shit and I'm now knowing how to put my pen to pad.
Yeah.
Not just write poems, but write verses
and structure it.
And putting these things together. And right about the time before Lose Yourself dropped, I already decided after going through all of Tupac's category that this is what I want to do. This is who I am. This is everything that I embody and everything that is me.
Yeah.
And then that was when 50 Cent started dropping. That's when Nelly started dropping. I'm going to tell you right now, Nellyville, yes, that was kind of like the Nickelback of what we could expect from a hip-hop artist. But Country Grammar was one of the dopest fucking albums, period.
Dude, when I was in school, Nelly was everything.
Everything,
all
man.
The kids loved Nelly. Everyone in my school loved it. I think it was like our, how the schools used to do like song, like best song,
right? Favorite song, man.
Like, Country Grammar was it. Like they were all about it.
I mean, and your shit is so hot when like a lot of these kind of like suburban schools will play this shit at dances. It might be edited, but like it's like, yo, man, they got this motherfucker from St. Louis talking about dirty, with a bunch of 12-year-old white kids, over there in West Valley or some shit, man, and so really kind of expanding, a little bit more my horizon. So now I'm about 12, 13, and I'm kind of, really just going, striking out on my own. And, I'm kind of like, I'm stealing some shit and all that because I'm just trying to make some money to hustle. So I'd go over to the media play, right? I would go and I'd buy at least the one new release, right? The new joint, either the Marshall Mathers LP or the Chronic 2001, like the one kind of new shit, boom, I'm going to swoop on that.
Yeah.
But then I would walk down just kind of like the quarter racks. I mean, they weren't quarters or no shit like that, but just basically kind of like the used bundles and
shit.
Yeah. And I would just be striking through. And then one day I'm just seeing this dude on stage
with his hands back and this whole crowd behind him screaming, and on the top it says Tech Nine. And I was like,
what the fuck is this? Let me cop that.
Yeah.
And so I boosted it. Like, I'm going to tell you right now, like, to all my favorite artists out there, like, I proudly stole y'all shit, man. Like, yeah. I mean, fuck Napster and fuck that. Like, that dude was late in the game on my behalf, man. Yeah. I was just out there getting it.
Yeah. I mean, and Tech Nine was like, I think it's funny. I think because everyone had heard Eminem, you know, everyone had, you know, listened to the album, and, you know, he was very, very interesting the way he rapped, because I don't think anyone had ever rapped like that before.
Right, right. Right?
But, and I always thought to myself, I was like, oh man, well, the way Eminem raps, like, I mean, who's gonna do something different again? And then I heard Tech, and Tech, I was just like, bro, who the fuck raps like that? Like,
right, man.
The way he did his shit was definitely monumental.
Absolutely, man. When I was listening to Absolute Power, I was almost sitting there like, man, who the fuck do you think you is, man? Yeah. I was almost like, God damn, this shit is incredible.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. That was how I expanded my catalog. Because remember, I'm having to learn all this shit, and I found this new thing. I didn't know about, you know, the Twistas and all that. So I'm here in Tech, and I first, you know, I was familiar with Bone because of Eazy-E,
yeah.
But I was like, man, this is a different kind of sound. And I will always remember, I was walking around Lakers Junior High trying to show these kids like this shit, and they're like, yeah, it's cool. I mean, but I mean, I like Bone. And I'm like, it's got nothing to do with Bone, yeah. Man. Like, it ain't got nothing to do with that. Like. And then, of course, after, you know, all these years, Tech builds his empire, and, you know, and he does a lot of shit here in Utah. And yeah, and he starts, you know, every time he came out, he showed out. The crowd loved it, all that shit. Then he would shout Utah out in songs. Now everyone's all on the Tech shit, which they should be, but I just sit back there like, yeah, but he ain't Bone though, right, man? Like, motherfuckers. But I think a lot of kind of what you were touching on, that East versus West shit, I mean, there was no way you could avoid it.
No.
Hip-hop. Like, that's what it was for so long.
Yeah.
And I don't really know when that shit broke, because it was still kind of on that with even after Biggie died.
Yeah.
And just a real quick touchback on that. That's how I knew how big Tupac really meant, because I remember coming home from school one day. You know, like I said, I'm 6 years old, and I see my mother crying. And I'm like, what's wrong, Ma? You all right? She's like, you know, this man was killed today. And, you know, I'm seeing the shot up, you know, the shot up Mercedes and all that. And, you know, you just really felt that in the air. You really kind of felt like there was a little, like, this was a somber moment. Even as a, you know, young kid, I felt that. And that's when I got to see also the power of music, how people that you've never met and probably never will can still impact your life in such a very positive and beautiful way.
Yeah.
So now that, you know, I'm kind of going on this path and I'm really kind of just listening to more music. I mean, shit, I don't know when it kind of dissipated, maybe when 50 Cent dropped Get Rich or Die Trying, but then, you know, now kind of almost like the East Coast kind of, you know, albums and shit, like, I was just starting to pick up and whatnot. And Get Rich or Die Trying was a dope album, but I think the biggest person from the East that there's no way I can never say did not make some of the most greatest music ever, and I'm so fucking sad we missed out on him, was Big Pun, man.
Oh, man.
That Capital Punishment record, I don't give a fuck who you is. That Capital Punishment record, from front to back, from production to structure to music and everything like that, is one of the greatest albums hip-hop has ever produced.
Yeah.
You know, you can put Reasonable Doubt right next to it, blows its ass out the water, man. Hov ain't got shit on Pun, straight up, like,
you know,
that, man.
Interesting fact, like, I've never, like, and I know a lot of people are gonna say, like, oh my god, like, how? But I've never really been a big Jay-Z fan. Like, there's some songs that I can jam to, but I've just never really gotten into Jay-Z. And it was like that with a lot of East Coast music, I feel like.
Right.
There was Wu-Tang, of course, and, you know, Big Pun, but Nas is always a big one, too, that really kind of impacted me. But it is crazy to kind of see that dynamic of music, no matter where it's from, that it can really hit you in a way that I don't think anything else really can.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's interesting is, I think a big reason why maybe cats like us over here in Utah, which, like, let's keep it 100, we're damn near the West Coast, man. Like, we're right there. We are the Western.
Yeah.
Even then, I still feel it, because we came around a time after the passing of Pac when we saw the biggest musical empire that we probably will ever see, and that was Death Row, man. I mean, like, and fuck all the bullshit with your Def Jams or Rock Nations, man. These were still, like, a lot of big corporate entities. You got fucking Shook behind the wheel of this shit, man. Yeah. You know, you got Dre behind the wheel of this. Like, this was, like, the very first time you really got to see artists doing a mainstream level of artist ownership, you know, kind of work right there. And remember, this is what I'm talking about from my young perspective. Of course, all the elitist motherfuckers are going to come in. Well, you know, the Detroit scene, man, you know, you had guys like ICP and fuck y'all Juggalos. I can't remember his name, but like the dude that inspired ICP, I don't know if it was LZ or I'm probably butchering his name, but there was a dude, it was his brother who really started the horrorcore shit.
Yeah.
And ICP, you know, they you know, he basically birthed kind of like the style, and I can't remember his name, but like he was doing that. And then you had the Master P's. We're not talking like Death Row was the first kind of entity to be, you know, kind of independent artist, but Master P was no fucking Death Row, man. We're talking what, $500 million? We're talking half a billion. We're talking an entity that was the biggest thing in the United States and competing in the world. You got cats from Long Beach who are putting up numbers like the Rolling fucking Stones, man. Like, I mean, this shit was unheard of. I mean, we, all these, you know, people that are getting into hip hop now and kind of seeing where this new era is, they'll see the Drakes and all that shit, but this was done way back then when this shit was still a fad, when this shit had a lot of controversy around it, when this shit was still considered, you know, it won't reach all these audiences. Yeah, you know, like it's not this, you know, or it's not talented or whatever the fuck. And, they're just like saying, yeah, $500 million, come fuck with me. What's up, man? Yeah. And so you had a lot of that still had that energy. And honestly, I really think it was Get Rich or Die Trying that really kind of brought some new East Coast energy. Because after the West, that's when we got into the South, man. That's when Outkast dominated all y'all motherfuckers, man. That's when, you know, and how could they not, man? Like, yeah, Outkast, man, you want to talk about breaking the mold, man. Like, Jesus Christ, man. Yeah, those albums, man. I just remember listening to Big Boy and Andre 3000, and it was just so fucking. I don't know if you're not into hip hop, you're not gonna understand our lingo. But there was something so fresh and just ill about it, man. Yeah. Like, there wasn't really nothing to try to compare it to, so you just let it be. You just kind of let the music, you know, just be what it was and just ride with it, man.
I think, and it's funny because like Outkast, like I remember listening to Outkast back in the day, and it was not like any type of music I had heard before. Like, they took a lot of hip-hop elements, but I think they had so much more to it. Like, there was funk.
Yeah.
There was soul. There was just triumphantness with their sound that they were bringing. Like, I remember when I first, I was chilling in homie's basement. And this was like, oh man, like 8 years ago. And I remember I heard Spotty Oddity Dopalicious from that. And my mind was blown when that song came on. The matter of fact is that like there's not even a lot of vocals to it.
Right.
That's what blew me away. Like, I mean, when they come in with those trumpets, man, it's like ba-da-bum, 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 you know, and like just the fact that you can make something like that and not even have to say barely anything.
Right.
You know, and the fact that people are still quoting Outkast today and shit like that. but I remember when 50 came on the scene. I remember a lot of people in my neighborhood thought it was a big joke. Like they were like, wait a minute. This guy just comes up. He had like the perfect backstory, you know. Right, I got shot nine times, you know. And a lot of people were like, "Wait, is this guy like for real?" And then you know he definitely blew up. I mean, I'm not gonna hate. Like I love 50. Like I mean, he had good shit back in the day. I think as he got, you know, older and did his own shit. Like I think he kind of drifted from the music aspect of it, and he kind of focused on other areas.
Oh, completely. Yeah, he totally, you know, was no longer just, like, chasing, you know, the music and whatnot. He just started just going off on some other shit.
Like his fucking vitamin water.
Yeah, his focus wasn't that, man. And,
you know? Yeah, I think he's thinking like Jay-Z, because Jay-Z kind of did the same thing. Like, he's just like, you know, I made music. Like, now I'm here to make money. Like, I want to become, like, a businessman.
And I mean, that's where you have to give props to guys like 50 Cent and Jay-Z, because Hov, there were a few records. The Black Album was dope. You know, like there was some of this shit I liked, but I never put him in any type of top five or nothing like that. I just thought he was dope.
Yeah.
But I think that was a really important thing when you got to see someone like Hov Because he lived through Tupac and Biggie. He saw, you know, what are the potential ramifications, you know, of all these different things that get involved into the game. And I think he was actually probably one of the first, and I, like I said, all you elitist motherfuckers blow me. Like, we're just talking shop here. But he was probably one of our first main guys that kind of really saw, like, you know what? I'm not going to be able to live off royalties forever.
Yeah.
You know, especially if I want to be Big Hov, if I want to be living these $50 million lifestyles, you know, Reasonable Doubt ain't going to pay me $50 million a year in 20 years. It just ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
So let me look at how I can diversify. And I will say shout out to Wu-Tang again, because they say diversify your bonds, player. Like, I mean, like, you know, these are artists trying to break down the game saying, remember, as long as you're just making records and you're just trying to make money off making records, you're still going to be a pimp or played, you're going to be someone's hoe. Like, someone's going to be pimping you somewhere in this game, because now you're relying on just making this music and you're not putting in everything else. So if this album flops, you know, then that house payment flops. You know, something else. You've got to be able to, if you really want to be independent, you've got to fucking diversify, you know, your residuals. You got to know what to do.
You've got that money coming in from a lot of different spots.
Right. So, that, I mean, that's what I had to give it up to Hov and Affiti about, because... Yeah, man, you know, sure, you know, people can say their albums, you know, got worse and all that, but you think they get two fucks, man? Like, they, because they also got to this really dope spot where they can now just make music. You know, it's no longer having to rely on that hit. I mean, you can even say Emma's in that driver's seat right now, too, and he's been there for a minute, but he'll still put out records. Whether you fuck with him or not, he's going to put out a record. It's going to go number one. But, I mean, he puts out, like, Relapse or some shit, and it flops. I mean, he just keeps on doing it, man. Like, I mean, it's just whatever.
Yeah.
So, I really just, you know, was always into music, though. I think another thing that maybe I probably not been as big into Hov is because when I was young, I needed very, very aggressive music to match a lot of the aggressive, you know, feelings and emotions that I was having, especially the older I got. Because the older I got, I now needed something a little more harder. I needed something a little bit more harder than Tupac. So now all of a sudden I'm hearing Brother Lynch Hung. I'm not kidding, man. Brother Lynch Hung, shout out to this man. Like, I mean, just listening to Season of the Sickness, I'm just like, yeah, man. Like, let's go ride on some motherfuckers, man. You know, like I needed this shit to be up to ante. So now that I'm kind of getting into, you know, a lot more my early preteens, you know, I'm still very socially conscious. I'm still always reading. I'm still very kind of aware of the social systems around me and just kind of the different things at hand. So now I'm kind of just still listening to a lot of this raw shit from Tech and Brother Lynch and a lot of these cats. And then I start stumbling onto shit that is way a little bit more, you know, very more politically in depth than what I ever intended, you know, because a lot of people nowadays will listen to my music and think like that's just kind of what I jumped out the gate with. When no, these were things that I started to realize, you know, I started to realize I could actually expand my vocabulary. I didn't have to just talk about my struggles, you know, as a child or any of this kind of shit. And that's when I discovered Immortal Technique, and that's when I discovered Jedi Mind Tricks. And I mean, I think I was in a really shitty. Really shitty trap spot, man. And just this dude had like all his all these like blank CDs, you know, like all you lame ass streamers, man, you have no idea the love that we had for making mix CDs.
Yeah,
man. Like that shit was that was an art form.
It was
right
a
there.
Treasure.
And there was just this blank CD and I'm nothing on it, and I'm just sitting in the car like, all right, man, this is a ratchet ass spot, man. I'm gonna listen to something to calm me down before I wanna blow out of here. And I hear Industrial Revolution. Everyone's going to hear Immortal Technique and think Dance with the Devil. I mean, I heard that shit later, and it was dope.
Yeah.
But Industrial Revolution, you know, hearing about, you know, fuck packing grams, learn to speak and behave. You want to spend 20 years as a government slave. And you're just like, man. Like, and he didn't say it in a way like, shout out to Dead Prez. They've always kept shit pretty grimy. But they weren't like, I mean, even Tupac, you know, or NWA. Like, they would talk about fuck the police. But it kind of was just right, like... They always, you know, they weren't ever like really in your face saying, what the fuck is wrong with you, fool?
Yeah.
Come on, get your shit together. Wake the fuck up kind of shit. And so hearing Immortal and then Jedi Mind Tricks, I got to hear a lot more raw energy in that. And that's just kind of where my ear and my heart always followed to it. And I would pick up different music along the way. I used to love all these different cats that would come out of the underground from either the East Coast or the South. I think a big one that really that I fell to, and I mean, and he was mainstream, was The Game, man. Because like,
The Game was sick.
I needed that kind of energy.
Yeah.
to just continue because that was the life I was pursuing at the time. I mean, I was going in and out of juvenile hall for dumb shit. And, you know, these are the things, like things that spoke to me. So before, you know, before Immortal and all them, you know, I still was very politically conscious, but I was still just kind of riding on some street shit.
Yeah.
So now, you know, this is where the progression goes and it just continued. And then, fucking A, man, I was about 19 years old and I finally recorded my first demo.
Nice.
There's about 5 tracks on it. And, you know, I used different sample beats from KRS-One and DMX. DMX is a major motherfucking favorite of mine, man. Like, I mean, it's hard when you watch, you know, people kind of go through their shit, man. But DMX, man, I don't give a fuck who you are. From when it's hot and goddamn, I'm trying to think of his records right now. But just like his first 2 albums, man, were just so raw,
it's,
man.
Like, it's funny because like I remember, man. Okay, so I remember. When I was a kid, my mom worked all the time, and I remember the nights where she did work, I would have to, you know, go to a babysitter's house, and this guy, Sam, used to babysit me, right? And this guy, I mean, definitely way older than me, and he was really into, like, Marilyn Manson.
Right.
And you know, played Mortal Kombat constantly, and he just always listened to like all these weird rock albums, and Marilyn Manson was always the one where I was like, okay, that's, I probably don't want to listen to that. That guy's wild. He looks wild right now. And so I never listened to it. And I remember he had like CDs on the table where he was. He was just sitting there playing his games. I seen this album cover and it was just a black dude just like soaked in blood. I was like, oh my God, what is
that? Right.
I remember I picked it up and yeah, it was DMX, and I was like, that scares me, you know, because I'm a little kid at this time.
Right, man.
And then I remember I went to, this is a few years later, I actually went to the record store, and I saw that same thing, the same DMX album, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy it. I'm going to see what happens. And I bought it, and it blew me away.
When it's dark and hell is hot. There we go.
But yeah, I mean, I get that transition though, into that more aggressive music and wanting to kind of expand because there's so much rap out there.
Right.
You know, Hemis was talking about like, you know, whatever type of rap or type of hip hop you would want to listen to, it's out there. There's always going to be something for somebody.
Straight up.
When it comes to it. I want to switch gears a little bit and kind of talk about, you know, a little bit about more about you and kind of like what got you started and like, when you started making music and actually like taking it seriously and knowing that it was something that you really wanted to take all your time into. Tell me a little bit about doing that when you're in Utah County, because that's definitely it's a separate thing.
Right.
Like it's so different. Like when I do shows here in Salt Lake, like you can have some shows that are popping and then you can have some shows that are just like, there's no one there. But anytime that I go to Utah County, it's nuts. Like, there's always people there, and people are so nice. And so tell me a little bit about kind of doing that on that kind of side of things.
So I knew, like I was saying, back when 11, 12 years old, like, this is it. Like, I found, you know, what it is that I want to pursue with my life. And you know, as far as a dream, it wasn't a firefighter, it wasn't a cop, you know, none of that. Like, this was it. However, you know, as they were saying, you know, in records, if you really rap about what you live about, and, you know, I was really into some shit, man. You know, I was involved with a lot of unfortunate shit. I purposely put myself in, you know, surrounded myself with a lot of negative elements because, you know, when you're going through these things, you know, in broken homes and whatnot, one, you think that's all that you're meant for.
Yeah.
And two, instead of being like all sad about it, you just choose to thrive in that shit, man. So I was involved, like I was being kicked out of school. I was getting, you know, arrested for a bunch of shit. And then, I mean, even at 16, it really kind of culminated when I was charged with armed robbery and I was tried as an adult. It's not a very proud record I have, but, and I hope it gets broken one day, but to this day, I was the youngest person ever booked in Utah County Jail at 16 years old.
Yeah.
And I beat that case, but the point is, like, that's what's going on. There's a lot of drug use, a lot of chronic alcoholism. And I mean, when you're at that age, you don't view it like that. You don't view it as drug addiction. You don't view it as alcoholism. You just view it as not giving a fuck, man. You know, like fuck the world type shit.
Yeah.
So I always had this shit in my heart. And what was interesting is all the scenes I was around, they, like, everyone kind of knew, like, and this isn't being arrogant. People knew that, like, I wrote some good shit, and people knew that I was good at what I did. I mean, because every now and then at a party, you know, hey, man, yo, 801 raps too. They call me 801 because I had the 801 tattooed on my face when I was 18. This is before I got it removed. For my kids, of course. Fuck y'all, man. I mean, I got plenty of ink, man. Like, fuck out of here. When baby girl says, daddy, I don't like it, you got it, princess. I don't give a shit, man. You know, but people are like, yo, man, homeboy raps too, man. Like, y'all should do this. And, you know, I'm never one to walk away from a challenge. So some dude is like, he can even be coy too. Like, nah, man, I don't want to battle. I'd be like, what, you think you got some? What's up, man? You know, so, I mean, I battled some cats here and there. Never on no battle scene shit. Like, this was just...
having fun.
Like, this was just having fun, and it was a spur of the moment thing. Yeah. I think there was only one time, like, I was literally, like, at this house kicking with some essays, and they're like, yo, man, the dude on the corner, man, he says he can battle anyone, and I'm just kind of high at the time, and that was all like, come on, man, da da da. I was like, all right, man, fuck it, let's do it. I went and I clowned his ass and all that shit. But like, all these things were still a part of it, but it wasn't my main focus at that time, because my focus was on so much other shit, on trying to live this Scarface lifestyle, live this outlaw shit, all these kind of things. And then at a young age, you know, it's almost amazing how quick a dream can slip from you. Like, I think that's a big thing I always reflect on, is how they always say that things can change in a blink of an eye, man. I mean, if we talk about what happened to Kobe over this past weekend, like things can just happen. You know, thank God that, you know, he was able to leave his impact. And this happened, unfortunately, after all this, but at least it wasn't before. How many talents have we seen, you know, that died before they could ever make something or transcend what it was? Think of Big L, man. I mean, he was already killing it. What could a Big L done if he wouldn't have been murdered, you know, and all this shit? So I'm now about 18, 19, and I kick it with my homeboy Manage, my man Jared O'Brien. Shout out, Manage, if you ever listens to this. And he has a studio. The first time I met him was just from some of my homegirls that I knew from, like, the classic skating scenes and like, slough parties and all that shit. I kind of made myself a little bit of a reputation, but hey, you know what? The reputation was getting me play. I ain't mad at it, you know? So, I mean, and then I just met this guy, and he had a recording studio. Like, he had, like, his own shit, and he was recording and all that, and I was like, you mind if I write something? All his own. And he's like, yeah, why are you asking me? Like, let's do something. And then it was just over that summer, it was about 2008 or something. And, you know, I finally, finally left my mom's house for good. You know, I was kind of being in and out of there over the past few years. And so I'm living out of a storage unit, but I was going over to see my man Manage every day. And then, you know, that summer, he starts getting just kind of a few shows. This is when shows kind of first started going down to Utah County. He would go up to Kamikazes and, you know, whatever. But then the DJ John Mon over there, shout out DJ John Mon, he was like, hey, man, like, I kind of live in PG. You know, we could do something here. And so they were doing this show at a place called Cali's Bar in Orem. And we're talking, it's a country bar. Like, the reason why it's different in Utah County is because it's a different element. Yeah. It just is. Oh, yeah. It's not City Slickers, man.
Yeah, bro.
But you still have a hunger for that. Whenever you have the lack of something, it's just the simple economics of supply and demand. When there, whether it's quiet or not, or even big or not, if there's even a small demand and no supply, that one bit of supply, boom, it becomes a big and exciting thing. Because even though it's a country town, this is the, you know, same cities where classic skating on dance nights would play North Carolina, and everyone loses their shit, man.
Come
you know,
on,
the Petey Pablos and all that. Like, it, so you got to see it. Like, wait, people are responding to this music like this here.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what the major demographic looks like. There's still something there. So at Cali's, you know, my man Manage, I was hopping on it, and he was like, yo, man, you, and he asked one of our other homeboys, you know, hop on it, and he's like, yeah. And we're like, fuck yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
And so at that time, I finally recorded a song. It was called Time to Rise. It was like, I mean, this is when I'm just like, man, maybe I'll just make, like, you know, five-track demo or whatnot. And we go to Cali's, and this is where we actually got to meet a lot of cats, you know, that were from outside of Utah County. This is where we met Pat Main.
Okay.
This is where we met Hood Zone. This is where we met a lot of different cats. And, you know, my man Manage goes on. He crushes it. I hop on and I do a joint, you know, and it was, and, you know, and it was a cool, good time. Now, that was very short-lived because when we did it the second time, I don't know who, but, like, one of the country fools started, like, talking shit to, like, one of the Hood Zone guys. And, I mean, and these, I can't remember where, like, if any y'all old school Lake motherfuckers know, like, I think they might have been from Westville. I'm not sure. But, I mean, like, you weren't going to talk shit to them with your country ass, man. And so, like, they're getting ready to fight. And then one of our peoples, you know, he threw a bottle at, like, the waitress. Like we turned it the fuck up. And Cali's was like, hey, we're done with y'all, man. We ain't doing that. So that was only, like, maybe 2-3 shows at max. But before that summer was over, I had a demo recorded. And, you know, I burned it, and a bunch of people took it. And, you know, but at then, I really started suffering with the drugs. I really just started getting caught, going in and out of jail. I was doing 6 months here, 6 months there. I mean, it was just, it just was what it was. And then what really started it, though, after going through a very, very serious breakup with my son's mother, I was in rehab. It's been 2 years. I'm 24 years old. It's been 2 years since I even wrote anything. Yeah. That's how far gone it was. I don't give a fuck who you are. If you think this is your muse or whatnot, sure, okay, smoking weed and all that. But if all you do is smoke weed, don't come with me with the bullshit, man. Like, if all you do is the excess, because we can talk about, let's say, a Dimebag Darrell, like, guitaring after drinking a whole thing of Jack, but guess what? He's guitaring. Like, yeah. He's doing something. Yeah. And I just, it was gone. And so for a few years, it was actually some few people that kind of wrote me off, as they should, you know, as they should have, man, because...
Yeah, I get it.
Because I went from being, you know, kind of the hood, the, you know, that young hood that was going around and making a name for himself, to just crashing and burning, man. I mean, I became, you know, kind of a laughing stock, man. Like, people were like, oh, shit, man, watch out. Like, almost like, hey, man, this is what happens type shit. Like, because it was bad. I was homeless. I was sleeping at bus stops and all that shit. Like, I wasn't writing. So after going through a lot of this shit, I found myself up in Highland Ridge. For people who don't know what that is, you know, that's kind of like an emergency intake, like an emergency detox and shit like that. Not like the VOA or nothing, because I was in Utah County when this happened.
Yeah.
And so when I was in there, I mean, they got you all peeled out and shit, and I was just waiting for my 5150 hold to be up. They don't call that in Utah, like, it's a different code and whatnot, but 5150, most people will know from the West, is basically kind of like a criminal commitment, like, you're too dangerous for yourself or the community around you, so we're going to, like, medically hold you in kind of like this, like, institution type shit, but they can only do it for so many hours because it's involuntary commitment. So what happens then is, you know, while I'm sitting there, I write a poem. And it was a good poem. And after that, I go off to rehab. And after I do about, I do 90 days in rehab, and there's just kind of a new energy that's going on with me, a new kind of different look on life, like, hold up, I'm not dead yet.
Yeah.
There is something here. And so, boom, I move out to Salt Lake City. So I'm in Salt Lake City, and I'm kind of going through some of my old shit from, you know, back from the old house. And I find all these instrumental beats, the shit that I had from Manage from all these years, man.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know what, let me try some here. And I put it on and I just start writing. And then I start walking down the street of downtown. I used to love doing that, man. I used to love just walking down the city, just bumping tunes, just walking wherever the fuck. And I see this thing on this light pole that says at Decrypt Productions. And it talks about these rates and all that shit. And I call it up, and this man, his name is Tony, but he goes by The Mystery. And we just start chopping it up, and he's like, yeah, come on through. And I go over there, and I record a song. And it just felt right. It almost felt like, hey, this is the flow right here. This is the sound. This is what it is. And what was funny is my moniker, because when I made my record when I was 19, I was going by Little Soldier. And the reason why I was Little Soldier, it wasn't because of all the littles and all that. This is before Weezy and them blew up. This was it was because I was always the youngest cat in the squad, but I was always wanting to prove myself. Always saying, "Yeah, man, I'll ride on this motherfucker. Da 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 da. I'm with all these adult motherfuckers and saying that I'll hold the gap. I'll go do all this shit." So I kind of just developed that kind of reputation. So we record this song. It was called Destiny. And as I'm walking out, I was like, all right, man, so for the computer, what do I put it in? I was like, do poet. And it just worked, man. Like, this is what I'm talking about. Like, how did this thing become serious? Because so many people can give the cliche answer. I've been writing since I was six. I've been da-da-da. Man, I didn't take this shit seriously until I was 24 years old, about to be 25, and I was in Salt Lake City after just getting clean, and things just fell into place. Nothing was forced. Nothing was like, I just started writing again, and I had production, and then I had a studio, and then I was like, you know what? Let's check this out. And then it was just a fate encounter. This homeboy who used to rap on the scene, he was a dear friend, friend of ours, Clausen. I met him, and he was he heard me do a spoken word, and he wanted me to do some shit on his album Old Soul. And I was like, yeah, I can write you up some, no doubt, man. I mean, shit, like at this moment, like everything's just coming out of me after all these years, so let's do it. And as I do that, I'm like, hey, man, I heard that jam you were doing. This is when he was recording with Chance, Clipped and Provo. And I was like, I can write a verse for it. And it was to his song, I can't believe I'm missing on it. I'll come back to it. And we record it. And he's like, hey, man, this is a really dope song. I got this show at Area 51. I'm opening up for Bubba Sparks. Would you be down to do this song? And I'm like, hell yeah.
They're like, wait a minute, what?
And so all these things just started happening. And so a few weeks, so it was just after I just turned 25. A few weeks, and, I had this record, Destiny, and this was the first time I ever heard of mixing and mastering. I was like, mix it up, Matt. And I paid the money for it and all that shit. And I now have this single. And I was like, you know what? Let's step it up, man. I found a photographer who I was working at. I was a dishwasher at this restaurant called Frida Bistro. His name is Dixon. And we went and we shot a few stills over on the railroad tracks and all that shit. And I hop on Facebook and I make a profile. I open up a Reverb Nation. It was a little bit more popular than SoundCloud at the time. And I dropped it. And I dropped this single. And it just really just kind of took over, man. Like things, people were like, yes, man. Like, here we go, man. So just right then and there, I already had a natural fan base from Utah County. People that were like, fucking A, man. Like, yo, did you hear what Poet did? Wait, who's Poet? Ryan? Wait, Ryan? Ryan Parker? Like, he's actually doing this shit now, man? And then it just went from there. After I did the Bubba, opened up for Bubba Sparks with Clausen, the SEM cats in Salt Lake, doing a lot of big show promoting. They were like, hey, man, that was dope. You want to do the shit we got with Sick Jack in a Psycho Realm? I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. And then after that, it just came pouring in. And now I'm making all these records. Yeah. All these records are just, I'm putting these things out. And, these stats are growing. And things are just now starting to click. And it's like, okay, this is that moment. And that was, that year was so culminative because I finally put this album together. My very first album, The Lone Revolutionary. And it dropped at the end of 2015, and now it's being reviewed in magazines. And then I think the biggest intro that I had into this career was, without a question, my show I did with Tech N9ne. That was so unpredicted.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't even dropped by then. That show was in July or some shit like that, and it was for his Special Effects 2.0 tour. And I just sent my music to the people over at the complex saying, hey, man, be down. And they're like, hey, hop on. And it's like, wait, for real? Wait, like,
you said, okay.
right. I mean, because, they always say, like, asking you shall receive. And it's like, no, you got to ask maybe like 27 times type shit, or ask 27 people. But they're like, yeah, okay. Like, they took a chance on me. And, they're like, hey, can you sell these tickets? Bro, I sold out of 100 tickets, man. Because everyone wanted them. Everyone was
going to go to Tech N9ne.
Everyone, it was so stoked. And then... Yeah. This is the time I met DJ Coma, who's been my DJ ever since.
Coma, we love you.
Shout out, Spencer, man. And he's like, fuck, man, we really doing this? Like, yeah. So we rehearsed, we got all this shit, and then we hopped on, we opened up the show, and straight up and down, we killed it. Every single review. We have the biggest set of the night. Of course, Tag comes out with the pyrotechnics and all the crazy. And it's Tag, man. Like,
it's his show.
But, we're just going to keep it 100. Like, our set really just set the wave and just been riding ever since. I've made three projects, putting out singles, music videos, and it's just kept on growing ever since then. But it was when I was 25 years old, and it was just everything clicked into place, and this was my second shot. This was like, you know what? You had this dream as a young kid. You were trying to fuck around with it and trying to have your cake and eat it too. But here it is. Yeah. Do you want it or not? Yeah. Do you want to go for this or not? And we ran with it.
Nice. I mean, it's kind of the same way. I mean, I
I used to make, you know, I made music like here and there, you know, when I was younger, and I didn't really think, it was mainly a hobby for me when I did it. Like, I didn't, like, I would rap at school and shit like that, right. And people would just be like, oh, man, that's really cool, you know. And it wasn't until, like, I was, God, I was just, like, probably in, like, 11th grade, just getting out of high school, and, you know, I met this group of guys, and they wanted to do music, and I was like, yeah, I mean, like, I'm down to do, like, a group thing, and we kind of did that for a while, then, you know, drugs got involved, and it's funny, like, when we were, like, high, like, that's when we made the music,
right.
Because that's all we did was freaking get high and write, like, there was nothing else, but then eventually, I think, you know, the drugs take over, I think they always do, I think there's nothing you can do to kind of win that battle, and it got to a point to where, like, I just think that myself wasn't reliable, they weren't reliable, and it just wasn't working.
Real talk.
And it was hard for me because I remember, so I remember I went to this house, my homie Andy, and we went to go get some heroin, and I remember we gave some dude the money, and I sat at a house for 8 hours.
Yeah?
Waiting for him to return.
8 hours, rookie.
He never.
8 hours. That's it, man.
And it was at that point, like, that had never happened to me before. And so it was at that point that I was like, "Okay, you know, I'm done doing this drug shit. Like, I just need to get myself clean." I remember me and my homie, we spent like 2 weeks in my mama's basement on methadone,
right?
Just trying to get by. Eventually, we did get clean, and I think for me, like, it was daunting for me to go on, like, a solo thing because I was just like, you know, like, oh, man, do I have the energy to do that?
Right.
Can I even, like, write 3 verses? I was so used to writing 1 verse for a song with 2 other people on it for so long. But I'm glad that I put my foot in the door because that's when, you know, I got to, you know, open up for Hobson and open up for Ritz and do all these cool things. But it's weird on, like, how you as, like, a local artist have to make that transition yourself. Like, you can't just, like, do, like, 1 song or, like, 1 thing and just be like, hey, well, I've done my work. Let me sit back and kind of just reap the reward. Because it doesn't work like that. You have to do multiple things. Like, you have to do these music videos. You have to do this promotion for yourself. You have to do everything in a certain order. And I think there's a lot more work that goes into it that a lot of locals just don't understand.
Right. I mean, that was a lot of the thing when we're talking about, like, the difference between Utah County and Salt Lake County is that in Utah County, it's not like I'm the only, you know, rapper from there. But I think it was just a lot of people that really just weren't taking that next step, that just weren't really chasing it. And me, that, like, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to get it done.
Yeah.
In, you know, fuck a timeline. I mean, whatever it takes, however long it takes, like, I'm going to go for mine. I mean, and you know, there's a lot to be said for it. I mean, I think a biggest thing that I remember was, you know, coming from Utah County, I was it in the scene, you know, during, you know, so many of these years. Yeah. And, you know, it was kind of being in a weird place because I wasn't, you know, Salt Lake County. I wasn't one of these, you know, part of the Salt Lake. I was still part of the Salt Lake scene, but I wasn't from the Up Rock town. I mean, I wasn't from, like, any of these different camps. I still fucked with all of them. We always made music and we always had good times. You know, shout out to, like, Burnell Washburn. I mean, he produced a joint on my first album. And, you know, got to have, you know, but I almost had, like, this kind of outsider status. Which, I mean, it wasn't a big deal. I mean, because in the end, I'm just trying to make music.
Yeah.
So with Utah County, it was just some good energy to be representing because, you know, we've had great artists down there. You know, we've had people that, for just one reason or another, it just never was being pushed like that. But I just had to push myself. I wasn't waiting on anyone. Yeah. This was good music that people were responding to. This was good energy. No one fucks with any of my shows, period, man. Like, yeah. I mean, we just went out there and did this. But I also knew that it was on me. One of the things that I'm very proud of was being able to get on the U92 Bar Series. Because I remember when, shout out to DJ E-Rockalypse, they would show the Sig Burners and a lot of these cats. And it's like, you know what? Let me go to this man's office. And I did. I went right over there, Broadway Studios, E-Rock knows. You know, and it, you know, it, I had no appointment. Like, I just go up to the office, like, hey, man, E-Rock available? And give it up to the man. Like, he comes, like, they page of me comes on out. We just start bullshitting. Hey, come holler at me later. Yeah. And then, you know, then I do schedule the appointment and all that. Yeah. And I go in, and I'm handing him a couple of my radio edits. At the time, he didn't play them. It's all right. But that was the time, you know, after bullshitting, he's like, yo, man, you want to be on bars? And so I'm proud to say that after that, I was the first cat from Utah County to be on U92.
That's sick, man.
You know, and it just kept on going with that. It's building these relationships and networks, you know, because I don't do pay to play. I don't feel like I need to go and, you know, beg for, you know, for a show. If it works, if it makes sense, if not, it doesn't. But I've established my reputation as an artist that not only am I reliable, not only can I bring fans out, but it's a good event.
Yeah,
you know, where that it's very professional and very well done.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to take all these things into play and just keep these networks so that finally when I did my most recent project, Rio Grande, which is about the homeless shelter and the, you know, basically the homelessness crisis we were having in the city, my record Rio Grande, it was actually a little bit after my birthday. It was played on U92. And these are just kind of the things that I, you know, I don't really feel like I'm too much in a position to try to like school artists or things like that because I'm still going for mine. But, you know, when people, you know, especially cats in Utah County that are just trying to put their shit out there, it's like, that's what it is. You just push it out there. You push it, and if something sticks, you ride that bitch till the wheels fall off. But if, guess what? If you make a record and it doesn't do its numbers, guess what? Make another record on it. Yeah. I have some videos that might have a couple hundred views and in a few videos that have thousands of views, man. Yeah. I mean, Rio Grande, my music video, that was even played on Park City Television. Like you got to put it out there. You can't just say, oh, since this record did this, this has to be the next record. It ain't always like that. You just got to keep on making this music. So being able to be an artist from Utah County, but was also able to, you know, because I lived in Salt Lake. Like, let's not get it twisted. I mean, I lived in Salt Lake City for years.
Yeah.
We got about 4 minutes left.
But no, it's really interesting, like, taking that kind of, like, aspect of it and kind of pushing it towards people because I don't think people are really... They're not prepared for like Utah rap, and they almost don't expect what they get. I mean, they expect something completely different when it's something, you know, something completely different to someone else. And I found that with your music too. That's, you know, when I heard I can't remember the first song that I heard, but I remember when I heard it, I was like, man, like, this guy's got some bars. So, I mean, I feel you on that. Quick, before we kind of wrap up, what's your take on, like, hip-hop today and kind of where it's going? Because hip-hop today is definitely a whole new basket of cats itself.
Oh, I love it, man. I love it. Like, I don't say stuck, you know, in, like, any particular time era. I mean, I can say, like, some of my favorite... You know, music probably came out in the early 2000s because it wasn't just 50. I'm talking Ludacris was... The biggest, baddest motherfucker to me. I will always say Luda was king of the South. I thought T.I. had some good shit, but he wasn't fucking with Luda.
Yeah.
You know, like, but when I look at what's happening now, one, you and I are a part of it. Like, I don't view myself as like some, well, I'm from the 90s, motherfucker. I just barely turned 30, man. I've been rapping for 5 years. Like, I'm in this era.
Yeah.
I just think it's dope, man. I think people need to, like, the people that might feel like hip-hop is going a different direction, well, yeah, because it's not going to stay in place. Rock and roll never stays in place. You know, country does stay in place, but, you know.
It has its own way.
But I love just so much of this new shit. The Denzel Curry's, I love Joyner Lucas. I think I'm the only cat that fucks with Logic. I don't know why. I thought Logic, his second album, I think it's called The Amazing Story Never Told. I thought that was a great concept album. Like, there's dope music out there, and I love listening to all of it. I love Spotify and, you know, New Music Fridays and shit. You know, one of my favorites that a lot of people think my woke ass ain't into, I love Gucci Mane. I think Gucci Mane makes some dope-ass records, man.
Oh, Gucci.
You know, but it doesn't, like, people will try to look at just, like, the garbage and just try to equate that with everything. Like, yeah, sure, Migos is whack as fuck, man, but, like, okay, you know, but XXXTentacion, you know, he had some good records, man.
And, he did.
And I think that's what people need to quit making everything so monolithic is, you know, music is subjective. Just because you don't like maybe this era as much as you didn't like the others doesn't mean there's not good music.
Yeah.
That there's music not is talented music. Music. I love the autobiography of Vic Mensa. Vic Mensa is an incredible artist.
Yeah.
You know, there's there's just plenty of names I can go off of that I still, you know, like these, you know, that I bumped today. And how could you not talk about this era without talking about Kendrick or J. Cole?
Yeah.
J. Cole's got some good shit, but I still will say if we had to make an artist of the decade, you know, they gave it to Taylor Swift. That was Kendrick all day.
Yeah.
Pimp a Butterfly, Mad City, it was Kendrick all day. So I love the new era of hip hop and the way it's going.
I like the direction too. Like it's definitely not something that I hate on or anything like that. I think music is music. I think people are going to like the things that they like and, you know, kind of evolve from that. But yeah, again, man, thank you for coming out and talking with me. I appreciate it. You fucking drove a long way.
Thank you for having me out, brother. You kidding? The second episode of Blues Talks, man. Let's do this shit, man.
Thanks for joining us on this episode. And we'll catch you in the next one. Peace.